Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Whole Scoop. This is a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields. The goal of this program is to present different and sometimes opposite perspectives to allow the listeners to make informed decisions about what might be the right health approach for them. I am your host, Carol Ferraci. I'm a registered licensed dietitian who has practiced for over 30 years. I'm also the founder of Naturally Nutrition, Inc., and you can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. As a healthcare practitioner, it's important for me to provide you highly qualified guests on a variety of topics in order to promote your own health and wellness. Tonight's show is Autism, Whole Pieces for the Whole Person. Please let me remind you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topic of discussion, it's always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. The call-in number tonight is 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to www.blogtalkradio.com/thewholescoop. Remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Blog Talk Radio. We will be taking questions later on in the show. At that point in time, I'll be calling out the last four digits of the telephone number. And if you are calling in with a question, please remember to press the number 1 in order to become part of the queue for the questions. I'm so excited tonight to tell you about our guests. We have very distinguished guests tonight. We have Dr. Noah Erickson. He is the founder and clinical director of Innovative Family Wellness and Dr. Noah's ARC, Autism Recovery Center, in Boardman, Ohio. He's a graduate of California University of Pennsylvania with a bachelor's degree in athletic training and Logan College of Chiropractic with a bachelor's degree in human biology and a doctor of chiropractic degree. Dr. Erickson is also a licensed medical acupuncturist through the International Academy of Medical Acupuncture. In addition to chiropractic and acupuncture, Dr. Erickson has had advanced in training in integrative medicine, as well as in laboratory and genetically based nutrition. This background qualifies him to address health problems using customized dietary protocols and the highest quality nutritional supplements based on specialized lab work and genetic testing. He is one of the few practitioners in the country who is specialized in epigenetics and nutrigenomics, a biomedical genetically based treatment for autism, ADD, ADHD, and related disorders. You'll find Dr. Noah Erickson at www.drnoahsarc.com and at 877-533-9993. With Dr. Noah tonight, we have Stephanie Siklik. She's a developmental therapist and an autism behavior specialist. Stephanie started her practice after families continued to call and request private and specific consultation programming. She works with families to coach them through individualized interventions related to their unique skills and challenges. When she is not running Bridges Behavior Consulting, she teaches graduate school at the University of Pittsburgh and supervises for their applied behavior analysis and early intervention programs. She has a passion for helping individuals and families reach their goals and specific skills in individualized programming. You'll find Stephanie at www.bridgesbehaviorconsulting.com and at 412-512-3467. So let's bring them on. Dr. Noah, Stephanie, are you with us?
I am. Hi.
And yes.
Hi.
I'm here too, Carol and Stephanie. Thanks for bringing us aboard tonight.
Thank you so much for being here. I can't thank you enough. We've got so much to talk about tonight. But I think before we get started, I kind of want to give everyone an overview of just in general why we're doing this show. Of course, it's National Autism Month, and I wanted to be able to cover this night and this month. But really, when I started to do some background work for this, I was just in awe. Just basic statistics here. Autism now affects 1 in 68 children and 1 in 42 boys. The prevalence of autism just continue to grow, and autism is the fastest growing developmental disorder in the United States. boys are nearly 5 times more likely than girls to have autism, and there is no medical detection and cure for autism. And the thing that hit me the most, too, is one of the highest things is that it costs families, on average, $60,000 a year for a child with autism. And when I looked at those statistics, I'm thinking to myself, you know, every single parent wants their child to have the most fulfilling life that's possible. And when they're told that they have to deal with autism and learn how to allow their child to have that fulfilling life, what are they supposed to do? How are they supposed to do that? And I guess, you know, for me, maybe we should just start basically. What is autism? Are there different levels of autism? As I'm looking at this, there's autism spectrum. And if I look at all of that and I put myself in the place of a parent and I say, this is what I want for my child. I want my child to have the most fulfilling life as possible. But what am I actually dealing with and how is that? Where do I go from there? Dr. Noh, do you want to start out with us?
Sure. My viewpoint on autism is that it's a multifactorial neuroinflammatory condition of underlying genetic predisposition, intestinal and immune imbalances, vitamin and mineral imbalances, and also looking at a neurological and endocrine connection with environmental toxicity. So when I dissect this down, my little piece of the puzzle working with children with autism spectrum disorder is looking at them from the inside out using a holistic drug-free approach that's naturally based using vitamins and minerals. The hallmark I would do is identify genetic testing. So I see it as a multifactorial condition with underlying causes with its roots in environmental toxicity, genetics, vitamin and mineral imbalances, and brain and hormone imbalances that help to explain the behaviors that we see anywhere from classic autism all the way through Asperger's and other diagnoses in between like ADD and ADHD.
Okay. Great. I mean, there's a whole lot that you just said, but the thing is if I'm a parent, where are we with, what does this mean for my kid? What does it do in the body? What is it?
Well, it's typified by impairments with cognitive functioning, motor skills. It's also a lot of social difficulties. Children feel like they jumped into a burning building when they walk into a crowd of people in many cases. They often have speech delay. Both receptive and expressive speech apraxia are often hallmarks. It's something that we use the genetics program to help unreveal and unravel what's going on underneath. So these kids often have challenges academically. They often have motor behaviors called stims, arm and hand flapping, toe walking, difficulty keeping the eyes tracking straight when reading a simple book from left to right and up to down. So at home, this could translate into tantrums, aggressiveness, poor sleep, problems focusing and concentrating. Socially, that could impair them. And sometimes, too, I say children have a particularness. They're extremely gifted, brilliant, and bright in many areas, almost to the point of being a scientist and maybe knowing something about the workings of a motor on an airplane, but perhaps they have social impairments or challenges. Other children are more effective at doing tasks, so we like to find out what they're good at doing. So how it affects them at home, it's different for everybody, and that's why it's called a spectrum. So what we have to do is understand these kids need to be treated personalized medicine.
Okay. Stephanie, do you have anything to add to any of that?
Well, number one, I thank you for Dr. Noah's brilliant description because I agree with his description on how multifaceted it is, how there's multiple factors involving, and it affects different children individually. And then to your question, it affects parents differently, and it's so very unique. And just as Dr. Noah said, we want to treat each individual as an individual. There's a saying in the autism world that if you have met one child with autism, then you've met one child with autism. And I think that Dr. Noah would agree with me that is exactly true. Every child that we see and treat and every family is different and responds differently, and so then we plan our course of treatment according to that.
Okay. So if that's the case then, and we're, let's just proceed down the path of if you've met one child, you've met one child, then if all approaches are individualized, then how is it then if I'm one parent, I can't pull from someone else and say, you know, maybe I should try this or maybe I should try that. Is it just that specific?
Well, ladies, if I go ahead, Stephanie, I'm sorry.
Sure. I'd be happy to let you go first. Go ahead.
Okay. If I could just stick to the work that I do, what happens is when we look at this as a uniqueness, we have to develop a personalized plan. So it could be rooted in genetics for one child. It could be rooted in environmental toxicity for another child. So along this entire course of an evaluation in history, we're working with a team. I'm uniquely positioned in the office there in Pennsylvania where we have multiple therapists, speech, applied behavior analysis, occupational. They have online schooling. They have a schooling right there. So we have to approach this as all-encompassing, what we call wraparound services. We get the schools involved, the parents involved. There's lots of things to do. But what I have to do in my world is identify them, test them for their food allergies, because you're right. It's funny to walk out the street and say, my kid went gluten and dairy-free, two common, very known food allergens that link to autistic-like behavior, and my child spoke, or my child took B12. That may work for a certain percentage, or that may have worked for the neighbor, the kid down the street, and hallelujah. But unfortunately, we see such variant, so we do unique biochemical testing, hormonal testing, nutritional analysis to find out what are their factors. So in my world, that's how I have to dissect it, along with explaining what does the behavior mean. For example, could stimming, right, hand flapping, arm flapping, toe walking, in my world, could that suggest as a brain chemical imbalance or a food allergen? Very possible. So that's one example of how I have to look at the symptoms and behaviors and put that to the litmus test of nutritional and biochemistry testing and find out if there's an underlying trigger, genetic, environmental, nutritional, that could explain the expression of that behavior.
Okay. And all of that being said, which is a whole lot of stuff, if I have a newly diagnosed child, how do I find somebody like you? I mean, you're in Pennsylvania, and that works for Pennsylvania and your particular local area, but how do I find somebody like you that is going to take that approach? Because, again, I want the best for my child. I mean, I guess I'm taking this stance tonight with the prospective parent here, and I think it's only because I want the listeners to be able to if they're going to ask a question, maybe I'll ask some of them before they get to it, and maybe we can help them think of other things. So what do I look for?
Yeah, if it's okay, I can speak to that.
Yeah.
For me, I am one of the few board-certified behavior analysts in the country. We are on a listserv. So if an individual is looking for board-certified behavior analysts in their area, they can go on to the board's website and in doing so can look for a BCBA in their area and contact them accordingly. Also, in specific wraparound agencies, you might be able to request a BCBA. It kind of depends on what state that you're in, how saturated it is with a BCBA. I think I also want to add to what Dr. Erickson is saying is how someone like me who's looking at the outside, so Dr. Noah, I'm sorry, I keep messing up the name, but Dr. Noah is so brilliant at taking an internal dialogue of what's going on. And where my expertise falls is the outside, so what is the behavior? And where my testing comes is in the functional assessment of the behavior, why is this behavior happening from an outside perspective, and then the treatment then would go along accordingly. Does that make sense?
Indeed, and I think this is a great separation. There's that little phrase out there that says, is this nature or nurture? So I would look at mine as sort of nature, right? What are inherited tendencies and biochemical individualities? And you would be looking at how to explain and work with the behaviors that you set on the outside. And I've always said I kind of treat kids from the inside out, so I like that analogy.
Yeah, and I think it's beautiful. I find for myself in my practice that it's incredibly important to work with the other individuals and therapists and the team collaborating with them, because there could be something inside that I don't know anything about. It's important for me to address it that way. And if there's a protocol that's being done for, we're going to use hand flapping because that's what was mentioned before, that we're using internally, then I need to consider that in my treatment protocol so that we can address it together. And then with those two interventions together, imagine what we could do to reduce the behavior.
Dr. Noah?
Yes. I'm sorry. I was momentarily disconnected there, and I'm just kind of playing catch-up. So absolutely, couldn't agree more. And that's why we like to work together with these, put everyone around the kiddo. And I do a comprehensive evaluation where I check multiple areas of their body in my world to try to figure out what's going on. So I'll give another example. I often have children who have allergy shiners. They look like they're raccoon eyes. They have little chicken skin bumps on the back of their arms. They have little Buddha bellies. These kids are little tykes. They shouldn't have a little Santa Claus-like belly. Their little Buddha belly is sticking out. That all means something to me. That could mean they have an intestinal yeast fungal infection. Perhaps those skin bumps mean they have a grain allergen to grains like wheat and gluten, the protein in wheat. Perhaps those big, dark allergy shiners mean they're sensitive to milk. So when they start to work with Stephanie, if I can take that haze or that everyday mental malfunction or that brain fog and clear that as she's doing her therapy, they'll be so ready and much more receptive to receive what they're doing on the outside because they feel better on the inside. So many times I tell parents, hey, if you didn't feel good and you were sick and under the weather and under-rested and you had a bad day at work and you came home and that nasty old neighbor next to you wanted to talk to you, you'd just say, bug off a second. These kids don't feel like learning many times because they're sick. They don't feel happy and joyful many times because inside they're hurting. Their guts are in pain. They have headaches. And many kids, if you think about it, are unable to express it, so they can't communicate, especially those with the expressive speech apraxia. They can't communicate to the teacher, the therapist. They're not feeling well. So what we have to do is love on these kids, number one. It's always my first principle. Then we have to put them in specialized plans and clear out that fog, take out that layer of health. And I would like people to start thinking about autism spectrum disorder as maybe more of a health disorder rather than having the stigma of a mental illness or a mental diagnosis on the DSM-5. And we could redefine this, because wouldn't that be neat if you said, my child broke their arm or my child has diabetes? Isn't that getting a little different response than my child has autism? So a lot of times these are underlying health problems that clear up the cognitive functioning that make a difference in how good they can receive Stephanie's therapy.
Yeah, I want to piggyback off of that because I like what you're saying. One of the things that I like to talk to families, again, what you're talking about, every child is different and every family is different, is that if you can address the internal properties of what's happening, then the child is more available for learning. And it's important to be able to address that. I won't get anywhere with my programming if the internal clock is not ticking well or if the individual doesn't feel well. Or if they really can't communicate that to me. So just piggybacking off of what he's saying, there is a real importance of working together and understanding how we can work together to help these individuals.
Okay, so all of that, I mean, all of that sounds absolutely just wonderful in terms of an approach and hopeful and everything, but is it affordable?
Oh, good question.
I mean,
you know what, I'm going to, I guess, speak for myself. It depends on the state. And so I think I'm going to ask Dr. Noah to talk about this medically, but for me, it really depends on the state, and it also depends on what the program is. There are plenty of free programs, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee either a BCBA working in that program or overseeing that program. That doesn't mean that they're not any good, and it doesn't mean that they're not valuable or that those individuals don't work on applied behavior analysis principles. But what it is, what I am saying is, when you ask if it's expensive, it can be very, very expensive depending on where you live and if that resource is available to you with federal funding or medical assistance or insurance.
Okay, so I'm a parent. I'm going to do this whole parent thing tonight. I'm obviously going there. And I'm a parent trying to get the best for my child or allow my child to reach maximum for a fulfilled life. And I'm not, I don't necessarily have the monetary means to just kind of throw everything at it. What is it that I can do that I can feel good that I've given my kid the best that I can give them and I'm still allowing him or her to reach full, you know, their fullest capacity? What kinds of things can I do?
That's loaded. Dr. Noah, do you want to go first? I mean, I have an opinion, but I just want to be sure to open it up.
Thank you, Stephanie. Sure. What I normally do in these cases is ask people to get on the seesaw and take a ride, and it's the seesaw of something called glutamate. So think of going to a Chinese restaurant, and perhaps they proudly announce no MSG, right? Monosodium glutamate. Dr. Russell Blaylock, a famous neurosurgeon, described this very well. This is an ingredient that keeps you coming back for more. Remember that old saying, you just can't have one, regarding a particular type of potato chip? That's that flavor enhancer, MSG, that overactivates brain cells and causes stims, causes neuronal burnout. It's linked to Parkinson's and linked to Alzheimer's. So easy enough, make the change in the grocery store. No dyes, colorings, chemicals, artificial additives, preservatives. Lower the content of glutamate. There's a cartoon. I have two boys. They're 4 and 6. And there's a chemical. It's called GABA. And the cartoon says, yo, GABA, GABA. And it's this guy holding this boombox, and my kids think he's the coolest thing around. Yo, GABA, GABA is the other guy in the seesaw. He's the lightweight, so he gets pushed all around. You want to lower your glutamate levels, change your diet, get off of gluten, get off of dairy. It's worth a try. More than 10 years ago when I started in this field, I was a DAN doctor. No gluten, no dairy. As time evolved and the science evolved and progressed along with it, I became an epigeneticist. So I interpret the 23andMe question. So to answer your question now, a step back about how you can walk into this, for $99, you can go on to 23andMe.com, and I am one of their interpreters of the test, one of the very few in the entire country, and you can get hundreds of gene snips, these little fragments of your genetic backbone. I always tease and say, you can't pick your parents, but now with epigenetics, you can do something about the expression of their sins of past, right? So you can find out for $99. You never redo the test again. It's one worth having. Take it to me. I interpret it and put you on a customized plan. It takes out the guesswork and the one-size-fits-all approach with what I do.
Wow. Okay. I mean, and I think that I mean, if I'm a parent listening to this, I'm like, wow, there's some hope. So if that's the case, then talk about epigenetics a little bit. Could you maybe just define that a little bit more and the nutrigenomics as well?
You bet. I always tell people, simply put, on day number one, I'm a nutritional biochemist using genetics, a.k.a. epigeneticist. So I tell you this, if you're zipping on down the highway of life and all of a sudden you run into a problem, anxiety, bipolar, depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, what about your child zipping along the developmental stages of childhood and they might hit OCD, anxiety, autism? They can hit roadblocks too. Genetics asks the question, what is in your background? So look at mom, look at dad. I love doing consultations. It's so cute. The mom will point to the dad and go, yep, it's his mother-in-law. She's the cause of this. The dad will turn over and go, nope, honey, you stay up at night all night. You have OCD and anxiety. You're always on the web blogging and researching about autism. It must be coming from her side. Anyhow, you're zipping on down the highway of life, and you're looking at your gene pool, right? Or some people call it your cesspool. Anyhow, once you find out what's going on with genetics, you can say, oops, we have a tragedy. We can't make that all-important methyl B12 to activate brain cells, to stabilize serotonin, to give you a good, happy, moody day, and have good sleep at night. So with this new information, it's cutting-edge science. We can now say, great, if I can't make this form of B12, I now know which of the five types of essential B12 I need. Boom, put that in place. You fly around the roadblock going down the highway of life. Yeah, the road's out. There was an accident and a tragedy. Maybe you could say a genetic mishap, but guess what? You keep on sailing. Now you start activating brain neurons, and you back it up by blood work to assess these values as time goes. You back it up by urine tests, stool tests. So we have biomarkers that actually track the genetic expression so we can put the science to the behavior, and that's the key to what I do.
So going back, you said 23andme.com for $99. That would give you the panel that would be needed to do exactly what you just said, to kind
that's
of give
it.
You the markers that you need to proceed?
That's it. And when you were asking who does this, right now there's only a few of us in the entire country. So I do Skype consultations from India. I have Skype clients over in Europe. I have people from all around this country. And, of course, we're growing now in the Pennsylvania and have been in the Ohio area. So the work I do is rather unique with genetics. When I went to Penn State in 1993, my biology textbook said that you couldn't cover up the sins of the ancestry. Now we know, with the advent of the Human Genome Project being completed, we now know we don't have to fear breast cancer. Of course, we're going to be proactive. We don't have to fear cholesterol and heart disease. Of course, we're going to be proactive. How do you do that? You look at this panel of methylation detoxification, and you go, great, maybe I can't get rid of toxins in my liver. The estrogens accumulate. That makes me at high risk for estrogen-positive breast cancer, to digress for one moment about something else. So we can go, great, there's a series of foods, broccoli, cauliflower, the cruciferous family, to eat and pull down that estrogenic level. If you remember recently in autism, people started to take broccoli seed extract. What were they doing? They were helping to make glutathione, a very important antioxidant that protects the brain and clears up liver junk. Basically, you got a swampy gut and a toxic liver in a lot of these kiddos. So what we now do with genetics is identify those factors, turn those switches back on, restart those organs, activate the brain, and we get a different kid.
So, wow. So tell me about the results that you've had. Before we do that, though, I want to clarify that website. Is it the number 23andme?
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly how old I am, too. I'm 23andme.com.
Well, yeah. Wow, you've done all of this up until age 23. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
You're the Doogie Howser of...
You Doogie Howser, that's right.
There you go. So then tell me, is there a lab attached to this? I mean, you know, I'm sure there are labs attached to these DNA profiles, correct? These are...
Right.
Established labs. I guess I just want to make the point for everybody to know that this is not some like, oh well, I'm this is the only website with the only, you're the only one out there doing it. You are one of the few out there doing it, but you're with well established, well researched, well just in general recognized people, correct?
You bet. And this is important. I'll even take a little different path here. How I've been so successful in growing the practice is I do not take a dogmatic approach. Just so all those bio moms out there hear me clearly, we are not against medicines. We are not against the pediatricians. We are not shouting to the rooftops about vaccines. We're taking a scientific, slow approach where we're looking at the science-backed literature. So we can make the gut-brain connection, looking at the health of the intestinal and how you can have little perforations in the gut infiltrating to the brain. We're looking at the brain chemicals that explain behaviors like norepinephrine and epinephrine that explain the ADD and ADHD. We're looking at these hormonal imbalances, low thyroid, adrenal fatigue, that explain cortisol, explains the aggression, the belly weight gain, it explains the insomnia. And of course, as we're talking about, we look at genetics too. So once we put down the hard, raw core DNA backbone of what someone's made with, we can use these tests to work with. To answer your question directly, there's a couple interpretive websites that you can use. One's Genetic Genie, another one is knowyourgenetics.com, and you can take this raw data, interpret it into something feasible that I can digest and understand because I have a biology background, human biology and genetics. I look at this, take all the biochemistry tests as an integrative medicine doc, and make this whole picture work to help explain the behaviors on an organic biochemical level.
Fabulous. On that, I'm gonna ask you to hold on 1 second, and we're going to remind everybody that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. On Blog Talk, and we're talking with Dr. Noah Erickson tonight. And Stephanie, say your last name for me, please.
Sicily.
I'm sorry, you broke up.
Sorry, it's Sicily.
Sicily. Stephanie Sicily. And we're talking about autism, and you can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. You can find Dr. Erickson at www.drnoahsarc.com or at 877-533-9993. And you'll find Stephanie at www.bridgesbehaviorconsulting.com or 412-512-3467. Generally, I take a call around now. And we can certainly do that, unless you guys have another point. But before we actually do that, I want you to go ahead and give those websites out, that if you have other websites that, you know, I've got, I was trying to write it down as you were talking, and I've got Genetic Genie. Is it GeneTicGenie, or is it, how is it spelled? And knowyourgenetics.com. I've got those two. Were there others?
Yeah, think of that old show, I Dream of Genie, right? So it's Genetic Genie. Just spell the word genetic and then genie, okay, G-E-N-I-E. And the other one is know, K-N-O-W, your, Y-O-U-R, genetics.com. So that takes the raw data, puts it in some interpretive sense to look at that very popular, well-known MTHFR gene that Ben Lynch describes so well on his website, mthfr.com, and it talks about this cycle of methionine, homocysteine, and using nutraceuticals like B12, folic acid, SAMe, so it puts it into the inner gear work of the brain, something that we call the inner workings of the brain, the biomolecular nutrigenomics, and we're able to get in deep. So try those websites out. It's a great place to start.
Okay, great. So if we take a question, I got to also do a clarification. Somebody just blogged in and said it's 24andme.com. Did they add something?
They're trying to age me before my time. It is 23andme.
Okay. All right. Got it. Okay. I just wanted to make sure it's just...
I've been doing this for 10 years. I'll stake my life on it. 23andme.com.
Right. We're not going to ask you to stake your life on anything tonight. So it's all good. but
I'm safe.
You're safe. You're safe for tonight, I promise. I'm just so appreciative. I mean, you're giving out some fabulous information. Stephanie, do you have any websites that people should be looking at or maybe want to go to? And remember, I'm trying to keep the premise here of the parent, and the affordability factor is real important too. And then, all the information that's out there, all the wonderful things that you guys are doing. So,
for me, when individuals usually come to me, it's either before they get a diagnosis or after they have a diagnosis. And so depending on where they are, I'm going to send them. And if it's for tonight's purposes, related to autism, then I might send them to some place as easy as autismspeaks.org. They've got all sorts of information. One of the things that I love is they have a 100-day kit, which helps families kind of navigate what they should do after a diagnosis or as they're going through the process. It kind of gives them a lovely task analysis of all of this, the overwhelming pieces that it sometimes seems for a family. There's plenty of websites that pop up if you Google autism. It really matters to me that you look at your state where you are, at state being in the United States. You can also look at your emotional state or where when you're ready for what you want to do next. And it depends on what your support system looks like. So that's just one place to look. But even in the state of Pennsylvania, I can speak to, there's a lovely group. It's called A Board, or Autism Connection of PA. It's one of my favorite resources locally to be able to go to. So, again, it's hard for me to give very specific details depending on where individuals are and what stage they're in of diagnosis or non-diagnosis or just seeking information or just wanting to know about your DNA or just seeing some levels of symptoms and wanting to communicate with someone. It really kind of depends. So I know that didn't answer the question well. However,
no,
I hope it gave at least a little bit.
No, I'm sorry. But you actually did answer the question because as you give national information like AutismSpeaks.org, I'm sure that anybody who goes to AutismSpeaks.org can put in their locality and find what they're looking for or what they need. So, yeah, you really did answer it. Thank you.
There's Autism Institute. I mean, there's all sorts of different places that you can check into. There's plenty. So it really matters what speaks to them and where they are.
Okay. Stephanie, a follow-up question. You know, Dr. Noah was talking about all of the wonderful testing that he's doing for the DNA, the epigenetics, and the profiles, and how the two of you can actually complement each other in your practices, because once he finds out and he deals with certain issues and he clears that brain fog, then you can work with that a little bit easier. What kinds of things are you seeing as it relates to when you getting these kids, because they're not all getting genetic testing.
Right.
So what kinds of things are you seeing, and what are you working with initially to, you know, kind of clear some of that out? Or if you're not, you know, what techniques are you using, and what are you finding that works?
Yeah, I think it's a loaded question, so let me just at least try to negotiate down the line here a little bit.
I got a couple of loaded questions in tonight, didn't I?
It's perfect, yeah. What I want to answer first is when I'm communicating with families is that I ask them what they want to work on, because I might have all sorts of ideas about what I want to work on or the teacher wants to work on, but I want to ask the families what they want to work on. And so it really depends. So if we're working on an elopement behavior, if we're working on a stimming behavior, if we're working on a communication behavior, things that I'm going to do is establish where they are now and create a goal that is observable and measurable so that I know exactly what I'm measuring and what, and everybody else could read the goal and know exactly what it is that is the target and what is not the target, so that we can have an equal playing field and so that we know when and how we can reinforce the behavior that we want.
Hey, so you said something there that kind of sparked something for me, in that what do they want to work on? What can you give us an example, like where you might see someone and you might want to work on something, and that might be what your gut is telling you as a practitioner, but then the goal is different based on the family, and then how is it, like, in other words, If I've got an issue that I need to get cleared for the family, then how is it then that I need to, you know, where do I need to go? What do I need to do to proceed? And how do you make that happen behaviorally?
Okay. So if I'm answering the question in the way I understand it, it, you know, the family really wants one thing. The family wants the child to tie his shoe, and I want the child to be able to ask for something to eat, right? Completely different
right.
behaviors?
Right, right, exactly.
Okay. For me, it's not up to me in the sense that, I mean, I could talk to them about the social importance of communicating and asking for food or what that might do for them to lighten their load. And for them, it might be so valuable, important, and socially acceptable to them that they want shoe tying to be a focus. And so maybe we can collaborate together then and say, okay, fine, can we work on shoe tying, but then also add in some requesting in there and hopefully be able to generalize that into maybe requesting food as a reinforcer or maybe requesting food just in the social limitations of lunchtime. So it depends on how we can do it. Does that help
okay.
answer it a little bit?
Yeah, no, that's great. So now here's a question for both of you, and then we're going to take some questions. You know, we've all, tonight, we've all been focused on the parent and the child. Let's face it, the children grow up, and do people with autism actually change? Do you find, what do you find as they get older? And you know, Stephanie, I'm sure that you've had some experience as it relates to as they age.
Yeah.
So, are there different interventions? What happens?
I'm going to answer, if it's okay, I'm going to answer that first, yes, but no, the principles of applied behavior analysis can go along with any age, any time, all of that, but the goals might change. Well, I just talked about tying shoes, and now the goal is shaving, or the goal is independent health care, or the goal is wearing deodorant. I'm not sure, but what happens is that as we age, the things become a little different. Or it might just be asking someone on a date and being able to navigate that social interaction. So it really kind of depends. But you're right, that's a great, great question. I love talking about it, how applied behavior analysis can be used for all people, all ages, at all times and all stages. And I think if it's okay with me to also then ask a question to Dr. Noah, because I'm curious about how often you might recommend to do one of these tests and if that falls into line with what the question was about aging. So do you need to redo these tests, or how often do you like to test to see where this is okay with you that I'm asking a question in this interview?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you both to you, Stephanie and Carol. As Carol, as you first posed the question, I was thinking of little Anthony, and I'll kind of give you a timeline here. This was a case about 7 years ago, a 3.5-year-old boy, adorable as can be, comes in to see me right around Thanksgiving. And his chief complaint from his mom was he had expressive speech apraxia. In other words, he couldn't speak and verbally enunciate what he wanted, did exhibit some behavior like echolalia, and had some major problems interacting with even his siblings, let alone somebody like a stranger at a daycare. So we had some issues integrating socially. So what I do in my work is lay out in a very methodical fashion, using the biochemical testing, initial analysis, comprehensive evaluation and examination, day number one, is how to walk through this. So in my biomed world, we have to go, we pull this back in sequential unlayering. So we found out in his case, he had fungal infection overgrowth, something called SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, at age 3.5 from chronic antibiotic usage for chronic strep throats. So that layer came out first, and there's a reason why. Clear up that gut so they can start absorbing nutrients. On a blood evaluation, we found that he was low in vitamin B12 and deficient in the right type of folic acid. So after using the genetic testing, we used 5-methyltetrahydrofolate and methyl B12, which activated his brain and could now absorb through his tummy. Now we're taking him into the winter, January of the upcoming year. I walk into the room, and we're getting there. We're seeing a more relaxed child, a child who's more willing to sit in a waiting room amongst others, both children and adults, and relax and integrate. As we move forward, we're into a layer now we can start addressing, balancing some of the metals and brain chemicals. So we talk about toxic metals, right? What's the hurrah-hurrah about the vaccines? Is it aluminum as an adjuvant and mercury as a preservative? It often is. This child had a chronic viral overload. So we waited until we could strip that out of his body as that a strong, healthy immune system in the gut. That was the spring. By summer, this brought tears to my eyes. Remember, I said right around Thanksgiving of the previous year, we had a child 3.5 years old who could not speak. We began to get speech. This is the progressive fashion, the methodical unlayering of this toxic trauma in a child. What we were doing at that point is using some high-dose RNA therapies, kind of DNA genetic-based therapies, to kickstart that brain and to coat those precious brain nerves to reconnect the right brain to the left brain and turn on some synaptic connections. Speech became extremely fluent, almost overnight if you look at it in a time frame of 6 months. So at the 6-month mark, we now had little Anthony speaking. His father said to me, it was like we pulled the string of a CNC and let go, and you heard, what's that, cow? You heard a duck. This kid started to speak and just let it fly because we turned on some brain switches. And what happens then is when we go through methodical unlayering, it does take time. I tell people it's a marathon, not a sprint, and Rome wasn't built in a day. So we have to undo the traumas, figure out the causes, and we use a very specific pattern that, yes, sometimes can take weeks, months, and even years to achieve the goals that the parents set out to in the beginning.
Wow. So we've got a blogged-in question as it relates to that from a parent who actually says, so would someone's intestinal health actually alter the progress of an individual? Possible for that, and I think you just said that. I think you just explained that, correct? That the unlayering. I'm going to try to answer this. You tell me if I'm wrong. I'm just going to try to put it in lay terms here. Unlayering is absolutely essential because what you just said is you started in the gut, you started with the intestine, you kept going, kind of like what I always use the analogy of peeling the onion. You kind of have to peel back the layers to get to the core of the issue. Would you agree with that?
100%, Carol. We always call it the swampy gut. Many of these kids had ear tubes, antibiotics, diets high in sugar, steroids in some cases. For those kiddos with asthma, you think of the medication like albuterol. So what we're looking at here is a gut that now has fungal overgrowth, candidiasis infections, streptococcal, Klebsiella, Clostridia. These are ugly bugs that like to hang out, and I always say misery loves company. So just say you get one bad dude in town, in time, another bad dude's probably going to want to hang out with them. So unfortunately, the gut becomes a hot mess of bacteria, fungus, and even sometimes parasites. Remember this, when that good gut bacteria is now disrupted, called dysbiosis, it creates leaky gut syndrome. You have undigested food particles floating in the bloodstream, creating brain inflammation and an opioid response, which snows these kiddos over. Another problem, too, the gut now can't make B12, the all-important vitamin for cognitive function. And also, remember, most of your body's serotonin is made in the gut, and serotonin's that happy feel-good chemical. So why do these kids have cyclic behavior? One day they're up, one day they're down. They're basically Jekyll and Hyde because they have fluctuating serotonin. They have abnormal B12 levels. And plus, remember, when you're constipated, when you're bloated, when your tummy feels yucky, don't you kind of spew venom at people? You don't mean to. You just feel yuck and cuck inside. So unfortunately, you kind of spew venom. So that's the big connection to the gut.
Okay, great. One other blog question we've got is and we're going to take a call here in just a second. We're running short on time, so I'm going to do this real quickly. Would chemicals in an individual everyday diet alter only genetic structure or make them more prone to autism, or how will they respond to a nutrigenomic diet? Not really sure. I think that's more of a three-pronged question.
I know exactly how I hit that. There's a diet out there well known called the Feingold diet. It's avoiding phenols and salicylates. Let's not get too confused. Just say a little boy named Johnny wakes up and has a glass of apple juice, and you had this warm, huggy-lovey kid, and now he is running around like a merry-go-round in your living room, doing circles and tumbles and jumps, and he can't control himself. Later on the day is a big old bunch of grapes, and maybe he has another piece of fruit that's high in phenol, say like a banana. And he's buzzing around. You're thinking, this is crazy. It was organic. It was healthy. It was no chemicals, preservatives. I thought I was doing the best thing for my child. There's a gene in the body called COMT, catechol-O-methyltransferase. The big to-do there is it processes these chemicals found in berries and grapes and bananas. And when you have a gene mutation, you're wise to also follow dietary interventions. Many people know the GFCF diet, that is avoiding gluten and dairy respectively. Many people know the Feingold diet. We talk about the GAPS diet. There's special diets that, yes, indeed, to answer their question directly, that the genetics can tell us to avoid certain foods, and equally as important, eat more of other foods. So I always leave my patients after doing a genetic review with not only nutritional supplemental advice, but dietary advice. So to answer our question, there's a definite connection between those genes and how I actually decide that child should be fed.
Okay, here's another one. My son was tested on a gluten-free, casein-free, soy-free, yeast-free diet on fungus meds all for years. He's older now. He was on an ABA program for years. Very well, but still has autism. By the way, his B12 is high. He's on serotonin drugs. Where do we go from here? It started out with my son is 27.
Got it. When there's high B12, we have to look to the lithium connection. We all know lithium as a drug, but there's a supplement called lithium orotate. I'd recommend running a hair test and a blood test of a lithium level and correlate to B12. When we see chronic candidiasis that's treated with medicines like nystatin, diflucan, ketoconazole, naturals like oregano and garlic and berberine and antifungal things like that, probiotics and such, that's great, but typically this is wrapped up higher in the gut. There's a disturbance in the genetics that's not regulating the pH or level of acidity to your gut. So if your gut can't heal, make new and healthy cells, and you have something called biofilms, I tell people biofilms are that junk that you clean out under your sink pipe when it backs up, that gelatinous, mucky, gooky stuff, or think of the soot inside of a chimney, you get these biofilms. So I'm telling you, we'll go back to the genetics, find out if there's aberrations in maintaining the gut acidity. That's often wrapped up in B12 and something called intrinsic factor in the gut. That explains the swampy gut chronically, and then we typically find biofilms, clean out the muck and guck, and then we don't have to keep revisiting chronic yeast, fungal infections, as well as concomitant bacterial infections.
Okay, great. Perfect. Stephanie, I think this question is for you. My sister has a 10-year-old with autism. I watch her and my brother-in-law constantly for new techniques and things to do. While I know they are great parents, I'm concerned for the 12- and 8-year-old boy and girl, sister and brother. I try to spend a lot of time with them, but I'm wondering if there are any ABA programs, family programs that are... and how expensive they might be.
So I missed the part, and forgive me because I think it broke up a little bit, is do they live in Pennsylvania or are they looking for something national?
It doesn't say. I'm not sure. But is there a website you could direct them to?
They're looking for communication programming.
More for it looks to me like a family issue. It's like if I'm reading this correctly, we have a 10-year-old with autism, and we have a 12 and an 8-year-old brother and sister, and parents are kind of inundated with helping the 10-year-old, and this one is worried about the 12 and the 8-year-old and what happens with the family and should the family be counseled. That's how I read this question. If I'm wrong, please blog back in and correct me.
out. So it's the way that I'm interpreting then this is I would always say seek some help, because if your concern is whether or not maybe they need some help working together, I do this in my practice all the time. I say, okay, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Let's make sure that we work with them. Hey, older sibling and younger sibling, this is how we can include you in this if you want to be included. If not, then this is how we can delegate our time so that...
Well, can you also... I don't mean to cut you off. I want to get to the phone for a second. I want to get at least one call in. But can you also... Like, do you also work with them for how the other kids are feeling? Because, I mean, that's got to be a really tough situation for parents in that if they've got a 10-year-old and they've got three kids and one of them... has autism, then at what point, you know, what do you do with my other kids who don't, you know, maybe they're just kids and they understand, but they don't really understand why there's so much attention in another direction, possibly.
Yeah, my answer is absolutely to seek help with that, is to absolutely address the emotional needs of the other children. They're experiencing this as well. There are sibling camps. There are sibling support groups. There are parent groups. There are family support groups. There's a reason there are these support groups, and that's because it's needed and people want that and it's valuable. So I would very much suggest reaching out and looking for that in their area.
Okay, perfect. Anything to add to any of those things that we didn't cover yet?
That we didn't cover? What didn't?
Yeah, is there anything that we didn't cover as it relates to anything that, you know, are there websites or anything that we haven't covered?
I don't think if it's relating to the conversation. I don't know. Am I missing anything yet?
I don't think
so.
Okay.
Yeah, could I just say one thing, Carol?
Sure.
I'm sure all three of us, our hearts and compassions go out to the kiddos. If I could say something, it's so common that I find the parents are overlooked. They're so self-sacrificing, right? They'll just give up their own eating. They'll stay up all night researching and calling and learning and listening to great programs like yours to get more information about services and therapies. So we have to acknowledge them too. In my practice, though, I see so many people who need the same support. Number one, I always say apples don't fall, you know, under orange trees. So typically, if the genetics bespeak something, we find similar tendencies and traits in mom and dad. They need supported too, but the stress level's high. So we quite frequently work with the parents. We give them natural suggestions, magnesium for calming. We suggest adrenal support to help with their energy and stamina. We suggest phosphatidylserine to help their clarity because these poor parents are often under-rested, overstressed, and I'm blessed with two healthy and well children, so I believe that we need to allow that parent to seek that same opportunity because I tell people I'm optimistic about autism. I don't look at the negative connotation and stigma. These kids are beautiful, bright, and brilliant and deserve every bit of our attention and chance. But during this, these parents are up all night, burning the candle at both ends, working. So we often find the parents need support too.
That's fabulous. Thank you for bringing that up. I'm going to go to the phones for a second here because we really only have a couple more minutes left. So let's do that. Caller 6121, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was really fascinated what you're talking about, the genetics, and I was trying to look up 23 and me while I was on here, but I can't do all of this at the same time. So my question is, if someone's not in Pennsylvania, can you still do, if they get this information, Dr. Noah, can you still consult with the parents with the genetic information, maybe to do a diet or something for their child?
Yes, yes, indeed. Something that's very popular because the service is so unique is Skype and phone consultations. So we do the same two-hour initial intake. We talk to the parents. we send out a big form and packet that gets filled out. So by the time I sit down, I'm looking at a history, blood work, and during that whole consultation, I'm ascertaining and gathering information. The genetics you can certainly do on your own. It's a simple salivary sample. If a child cannot spit, and we've had those kiddos, you can do a blood test too. It's about 5 times more expensive, but hey, it gives us the same data at the end of the day. So you can definitely do that, and you can check out my website, which is drnoahsark.com, and you can find my information there, and we'll help you through interpretation of that genetic information, which really is the hallmark of my practice.
All right, thank
you. I think we're going to have to end it there for tonight. I want to say thank you to Dr. Noah and to Stephanie. And I want to make sure that people know how to get in touch with you again. So I'm just going to give this real fast. DrNoahsArk.com, you just gave, 877-533-9993. And Stephanie Sickley, did I do that right this time?
Oh,
okay, good. www.bridgesbehaviorconsulting.com, 412-512-3467. Our next show, the Full Scoop, on April 16th, where we'll be talking about eating out, how many of us really have a choice. We're going to be talking with Amy Murdahl Miller, formerly with the Culinary Institutes of America, and Susan Linke, who's one of the country's leading authorities on food sensitivity and allergy. And we're going to talk about what restaurants are offering in terms of healthy eating, and the new program that's coming out with conglomeration of restaurants, and how people with allergies and sensitivities can join in on that and actually have a dining experience. So we're looking forward to that on April 16th. I want to say thank you again to Dr. Noah and to Stephanie. Again, I'm your host, Carol Ferraci. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. And thank you very much, and good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.